Lectionary Lab Live is recorded in the studios of the 405 Oxford Group, Gainesville, Florida, and Brasstown, North Carolina, a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Good to hear from you today and glad to be with you for another episode. We're preparing today for the second Sunday after Pentecost, June the 2nd, 2013. We're happy to have as our guest preacher and commentator today, the Reverend Dr. Lisa Bandle. Lisa is the pastor of the Davidsonville United Methodist Church in Davidsonville, Maryland. Good morning, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with both the Bubbas. It's the two Bubbas and the babe.
Two Bubbas and a babe. All right.
You could say that. If we had, we'd have been in deep trouble. So since, we're really glad.
That's why I said it.
Since you brought it up, we'll roll with that. I like it. I like it. Lisa is not only a minister and a babe, but is one of our friends and colleagues from the First Parish Project. And Lisa, take a minute and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and, you know, your journey in ministry and how you've gotten where you are and a little bit about the place where you serve.
Okay, well, I'm serving at Davidsonville United Methodist Church in Davidsonville, Maryland, which is a suburb of Annapolis and Washington, D.C., about a 10-minute drive from downtown Annapolis. The church is about a medium-sized church. We average about 180 on Sunday between two services. We have our first service is our praise and worship with a band. Our second service is our more traditional Methodist service. And I started there in July of 2010. And before I served there, I was in more of a rural church, which is where I got connected with FPP program when I was at Lisbon. And that was a smaller church, about an average of about 100 folks on Sunday. And then before that, I was an associate at a church for 5 years. I got my call to ministry in undergrad. I went to liberal arts college and had to take a religious studies class to fill one of my slots for one of my electives, and just really felt the call of God on my heart to be a Christian, and took that from there to, and I'd always grown up in a Christian family. I just hadn't really answered the call, in my opinion, to accept that call. And just took it from there and started taking religious studies classes, and actually went to summer school and took some of my classes at a community college so that I could take more religious studies my senior year. So that's kind of where I got my call to ministry. Then went to Wesley Seminary for my master's degree.
So it was in academia that your heart was strangely warmed, as it were.
Yeah.
And, cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. And I have a 14-year-old dog named Niebuhr after Reinhold Niebuhr.
Yep.
It keeps me rather straight and everything, and reminds me of what's important. I've never lived near the water. Growing up, we were more of a farming community, and living near Annapolis, I've really, the last 2 years, have experienced how wonderful it is to be near living water, and just the serenity that it brings, and the peace it brings to people's lives, and the beauty of it. I really like it, except for the traffic in Annapolis. It's a gorgeous place to be a part of in the community.
Very good. Well, thanks for letting us know a little bit about that setting, and helps us all feel a little more connected. And here at the Lectionary Lab, we really are interested in the work of pastors and all of the settings where they are and the people that come week after week to listen for the Word of God. And it's a great privilege we have. And so thank you for joining us today. We're going to jump right on into the text. We've got outstanding text, as happens. We have some options today. We have a couple of readings from First Kings. We have Psalm 96. We're going to be in Galatians for our epistle reading today, and then the gospel passage from Luke chapter 7. Delmer, why don't you lead us in here? What are our considerations today for preaching? And then let's talk about both of the King's passages. First, we've got the longer passage about Elijah, and then the option for a shorter passage with Solomon, but help us get started here today.
Well, you know, this is, we've moved into what is called ordinary time, you know, when it's not building up to or leading away from a particular holy day in the Christian year. In ordinary time, it's good to look to the gospel lesson itself as kind of leading the theme for the day, to find the theme for the day. And looking at this gospel lesson, and you look at the centurion and his slave, and one of the things I started thinking about was the issue of outsiders and insiders, outsiders, foreigners, aliens. And both of these Old Testament texts tap into this. I mean, you've got this big conflict between the priest of Baal and Elijah and what's going on there. In the other lesson on praying the temple, there's this prayer that foreigners will be welcomed within this temple, you know? And so you've got this tension today, and I'm always looking for a tension within the text to explore. Is a tension between the exclusive claims of Israel, of Israel's God to be the God, or on the Christian side of that, the exclusive claims we have about Jesus Christ.
Right.
Balanced against, in all of these, the inclusive claims, particularly in the Solomon text dedicating the temple, and in the gospel where the healing goes out to the Roman centurion who has more faith than the people of Israel, the inclusive claims that all people are welcome. So as we walk through these today, I think it's good to just say, where are we on this? You know, how does this work itself out? We live in a diverse, pluralistic, multicultural world. And so how do we balance these claims, not only in our preaching, but in the way we live out our lives as a community?
Right.
Looking at, you know, in First Kings, you've got a way in which it is, we're right, you're wrong. Our God's right. We're going to have this big contest between these two gods. And one of the things I have to tell you I always loved about this text is 8:27. The delicacy with which most people translate that text. Cry aloud, surely he is God. Either he is meditating or he has wandered away.
Right.
The most literal understanding of he has wandered away is he's relieving himself.
Yeah,
he's gone to the bathroom.
He had to head to the big boys' room.
Nobody translates it that way.
Right.
So I always find that amusing. But I think there's a point there, because for many of us, the more offensive thing in this text is the whole business. We don't delicately translate the fact that we see our God, the God that we worship, killing 400 people for worshiping the wrong God. That's pretty offensive, you know? It's a struggle in all of these texts, but in that text, balance that with that other text. I don't know which way you want to go, is where he's saying all foreigners are welcome, but they're welcome if they acknowledge the God of Israel to be the God.
Yeah.
That's the tension in those texts.
Yeah, when a foreigner comes and prays toward this house, that second passage talks about. Yeah, Lisa, jump in here a little bit. Either help us with that line of thinking, or tell us what you're thinking in coming to this story of. Let's go with Elijah and the prophets of Baal here. What are your thoughts as you prepare to possibly use this text in your preaching?
Well, what I was caught on was it was Elijah's loyalty to his faith, and the fact that, you know, here you have this king who's got all this power and all this amazing power on earth. He can give them anything basically that they want. People just flock to that. He's got 500 prophets of these other gods, and then you got Elijah by himself, and then he just kind of says, "Well, let's have a game here. Let's see, you know, you build your altar, we'll build an altar. I'll let you choose which bull you want to sacrifice. You choose. There's two. You can choose the one that you want." I just think it's kind of like it comes down to, all right, we're going to see who is really, you know, the one that we need to follow. And it takes a lot of, that's just amazing, the sense of loyalty Elijah has to believing. I mean, can't imagine facing that many people telling me I was wrong.
Yeah, and you raise another approach to the text, which is, you know, what we're, as preachers, we have to think here, how are we going to approach this? What's the entree for the people listening? And Delmer, you've brought up one entree with the idea of, you know, the foreigners versus those who are accepted. And Lisa, I like what you're saying here, this stark contrast between the apparent power on one side, the king, 450 prophets of Baal, all the advantage seems to be on one side, and, you know, one guy who's going to call on his God and have this trust. So both of those, I think, are possible approaches and a lot to play around with.
This is the Super Bowl of the game. This is it. This is, you know, we're putting all down today. on this game. And I just love the taunting of, you know, well, maybe he's asleep. Maybe he's busy. Maybe you need a, you know, a little louder, guys. I mean, there's only 500 of you chanting, you know.
I just wondered how long it would take Lisa to work in a Super Bowl analogy.
Yeah, I was wondering that, too. You're a Redskins fan, right?
She's going to come and get you, Delmer.
And Elijah uses the Raven.
Elijah uses the Raven, right.
Exactly.
Yeah, the symbol of choice.
They take care of him.
Belated congratulations to the Ravens and their fans for sticking in there. It was an amazing run last season.
Thank you.
I appreciate that approach because, I mean, if you take it outside of the formal religion debate and you look at, at a kind of a point of view, what is your God? If the God is the thing you give your life to. Then we live in a culture in which our gods can be our technology, our prosperity, and all that kind of stuff. And how difficult it is for us in this materialistic culture in which we live to stand firm for the faith in a lot of ways. I mean, that's a route one could talk about and say, move away from, I'm not a Muslim or I'm not a this or that, those kind of things, but think in terms of values that run against the basic understanding of Christian morality, and how does one find the courage to stand when everybody else is going the other way? It's kind of, Mom, everybody else was doing it, and we have a bit of that thinking, and that's part of that text for me, is that standing up for values within the midst of the culture.
Yeah, a lot of different ways to walk around in this text, and I have to admit that I now have a new favorite translation of this with the NRSV here. I grew up on the King James Bible, and verse 21, how long halt ye between two opinions? You know, I've always thought that was intriguing. I love this translation. How long will you go limping with two different opinions? And that just... Yeah. That just begs to me for a sermon. Are we limping for the Lord? You know, and that's not.
I like that.
Yeah. And we all are wounded. We have a lot of wounded people in our congregations.
Yeah.
You know,
That's true. Well, for this text, and as we continue to, Lisa, something I'm interested in. Delmer talked a moment ago about, when we consider the society we live in, a pluralistic world, et cetera, you are obviously a minister in a strong United Methodist congregation. You spend time with the people of God. You also have a ministry as a chaplain in the local police department. And I would welcome you to talk a little bit about, what do you do with either these kind of stories or the expression of faith in a place where everybody didn't show up and sit down in nice, neat rows to listen to you preach a sermon? What it's like living, I don't want to necessarily say in the real world, but to be a ministry presence in that kind of setting.
Well, it's interesting. In the past, I had worked with the local fire department. And now that I'm in Davidsonville, I've been working with the police department. It's a very different ministry. It's much more of a ministry of presence and much more of a one-on-one. That when the fire department, I felt like I was a ministry of presence, but I was with a large group most of the time.
Right.
Now I do one-on-ones most of the time. I sit in a squad car with an officer and I'm there with them for 8 hours.
Wow.
And we talk about everything from the beginning to the end of life. I hear stories about parents' divorces, I hear a story about adultery, I hear stories about just what's going on in the politics of the police department. You know, of course, I say, how do you deal with this? And we talk about faith, and usually it's, a lot of folks are a little weirded out about having the chaplain ride with them. They think they're in trouble or something. And,
right.
You know, like, oh no, what did I do now? Why is the lieutenant making me ride with the chaplain? But usually within about an hour, they're pretty calm about it, and we talk about things that are connected that we have in common. That's why I could bring back football into the story, of course.
Yeah.
But that's one way of making a connection. And then they'll talk about, I usually don't bring up too much about faith until they are open to it.
Right.
They know what church I'm connected with right away. I'll tell them what church I'm at because I ride usually with folks that are in the station in my area. And then later on they'll usually say, well, you know, I grew up in this kind of faith background and this is what I understand. I've had the great opportunity of riding, you know, this past winter, three times I've rode since January with a rookie. He's 22. and a female who's had some really difficult family crises going on, and she's gotten closer to her faith, and we've discussed faith quite a bit. Yeah. So I feel like I've been really rewarded to be a part of that relationship and helping her through some of her difficulties.
A lot of ways to preach, aren't there? And sometimes yeah. it's just showing up. Good.
Yeah, just showing up, being present. It's one-on-one sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Delmer, I don't want to cut Solomon short in his passage, but I'm also interested in keeping us on track and moving along. Anything else about the briefer passage?
I think the main thing I was looking at is that whole issue of the foreigner and mm-hmm. the foreigner, because I believe it's there because it ties to the gospel lesson.
Right. Okay.
With the centurion mm-hmm. and the slave. And so I think it's more illustrative, and that's about all, what I was
good.
Wanting,
well,
wanted to point to.
Great. Well, we're going to move on to that. Let's take a moment to sit with the Psalm 96 text. We've had a series of these over the last few weeks that, again, this is expressive. This is praise. This is active language. This is set firmly in the context of worship. Anything, Delmer, you want to point to in this psalm? And then I'll go to Lisa.
There are a couple of things. One is again, balance, that whole balance of all people and one God is there. Sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth, his marvelous works among mm-hmm. all the peoples.
Right.
Be revered above all gods, for all the gods of the peoples are idols. So you've got that exclusive claim, inclusive of all people dialogue to go with. The other one is that it's interestingly, there's a lot of the great themes, theological themes are here, creation, salvation, and judgment. All in this one psalm, and sometimes psalms are seen as poetic add-ons, and it's a possibility to talk about. You know, they were the hymnody of the children of Israel, and hymnody is where the great lay theology happens. If you can't make a hymn out of it, one of my professors said it's not good theology.
Yeah,
and this is a theological exploration of the relation of creation, salvation, and judgment. In, you know, 13 verses. So those are good preaching possibilities there.
Yeah. Lisa, thoughts on the psalm?
I kind of was caught on the word all as well, and the kind of the joyful, hopefulness, you know, the Lord is King, that it's a new song that all the earth will, you know, praise. That was kind of where I kind of was caught on that psalm as well.
For me, I'm struck by nature imagery and the connection to the creation, and often try to continually remind my folks that God's salvation, yes, it's for all the people, but when it says all the earth, that's exactly what it means. Let the sea roar, let the trees of the forest sing for joy. I mean, this is God's plan of salvation, let me use a good evangelical term there, for all of creation.
Yeah.
You know, God is interested in making the world right. Very more inclusive all sometimes than we stop to think about. Well, let's go to the epistle then. We're beginning a series of readings in Galatians. We open it up today. Delmer, what about this epistle passage?
Well, as you say, we're beginning a series of reading in Galatians, and I did talk to a couple of my friends who are from a more reformed background who are delighted that they said, one of them said, oh, I can do a series on Galatians now, you know, and that kind of continuity in one book and still be lectionary. And it's true. You can walk through but the basic themes of Galatians. If that was an ordinary time's a good time to do that. One thing you mentioned.
Yeah, I was just going to say, now, that's one of the advantages of ordinary time is the opportunity to work sort of serially here. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the other thing here is this is a real Barthian text, you know, Karl Barth, with God coming as other, entering into our world. I mean, this is not about we figured out religion, sent neither by human commission nor from human authorities. I'm sent from God. That sort of thing is where he's coming from, revelation versus human experience. And the argument here that Paul is exploring is I brought you the real gospel and now you're deserting it for something confusing. And I was thinking, you know, there's a lot of confusion in Christian theology these days. There always has been since the Reformation and before, but a lot more now of in all our traditions, all our denominations of ranges of what's acceptable or whatever. And this is again, one of those kind of tensions. Does orthodoxy mean anything anymore? How do we decide? Pastorally, boy, verse 10 is to me, a landmine, a minefield. Because if you go in saying, I'm not going to try to please people, that doesn't work because you disconnect. But on the other stand, you're not there to tickle their ears, but there to proclaim the gospel. How does one walk through that one? Potentially fine line there. So I find this a fascinating text to think about. How does one adhere to the truth without excluding people who disagree with you? I guess I'm on that inclusive, mm-hmm. exclusive. How do you understand your claims while not excluding people who don't share your point of view? And as a, how do you create that community?
Lisa, carry that on for us a little bit, or give us your thoughts on the Galatians passage.
Well, I feel for Paul. I actually hurt for him in this, because I feel like as a pastor, there's so many times that we feel like, you know, who are we here to really worship? Who are we here to serve? Am I serving the United Methodist Church? Am I serving Davidsonville United Methodist Church? Am I serving the Board of Trustees? Am I serving my staff parish relations committee? Am I serving my biggest givers? Or am I simply serving God? And then there's the Book of Discipline. And I feel like the legalistic sometimes is just so frustrating. And I can imagine thinking over and over again to myself that saying when you just said about verse 10, am I trying to win the approval of the men of this church? Am I trying to get people to agree with what I want to do? Or can I just give in? Or am I really serving God? And if I'm serving God, then, you know, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm a servant of Christ. But it just gets beaten down sometimes. This was a tough one when I read this. I felt like it really kind of speaks to clergy.
I was just going to briefly say, you know, most people have figured out I spent some years as a United Methodist, mostly as a student pastor. And I remember my first district superintendent, he was saying at the end of every meeting, kind of like the sergeant in blue, whatever it was. Hill Street Blues, when he'd say, be careful out there. My district superintendent say, go out there and don't get in any trouble you're not supposed to be in because you're serving God. And I've kept that with me. It's not that I'm not supposed to be in trouble, but the trouble I'm in is supposed to be because I'm serving God.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It strikes me that this passage is one that has to be handled with a great deal of humility,
yeah.
as opposed to the danger of handling it with arrogance. Right. As a pastor or as a Christian, we can handle this inclusivity, exclusivity, either arrogantly, or we can handle it with some humility. I think finding that line of, am I pleasing God, here to do I work for Christ, or am I here to please people? I always have to try to find a way to approach that with some humility. You know, that I find that just works a whole lot better.
Jim Wallace's latest book is called On God's Side.
Right.
And on the front, he quotes Abraham Lincoln during the midst of that, the Civil War, saying, my concern is not whether God is on our side. My greatest concern is to be on God's side.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's, I think, where we come down on this text, is that too many of us claim God's on our side and we're his front man. Mm-hmm. And the issue is to try to make sure that what we're doing, we're on God's side, not our own or other people's.
There you go. We better give some time here because our time is fast running out to the gospel then in Luke chapter 7. And Delmer, you've already introduced it a bit to us. What particularly do you want to say about then preaching this text?
Well, there are two issues. One is the one that I've been talking about, which is the whole issue of how inclusivity, exclusivity, how do you involve a stranger within? And Jesus shows an example of dealing with someone who's an outsider, two outsiders at opposite scales of being outside. One's a slave, a real nobody in both cultures. And the other is a nobody in the Jewish culture because he's the leader of the conquering and occupying force. But yet he has become partially an insider, as it says, as the story goes on. He's worthy of you having to do this for him. He helped build our synagogue. He's become a part of the faith. What was interesting to me is the playoff in four of he is worthy, and in six of the man himself saying, I'm not worthy. And mm-hmm. I think homiletically, a good play to play around with is that worthy, not worthy dialogue of a sense of humility and who's the people wanting to drum in and saying, well, he's worth you dealing with.
Right.
He's worth you, God taking care of. And how often do we find in our congregations people trying to figure out who it's worth reaching out to and who is it worth involving, working with? You know, who's acceptable and who isn't? And the person that, and so these Jewish elders, though they're trying to include him, he says, he's one who's worthy of being a part of what our household of faith.
Yeah.
And we do that all the time. But the person himself talks about not being worthy and of his mm-hmm. trust that God will, that Jesus will do what needs to happen. I think that's a real opportunity there for preaching, is to talk about that worthiness, not worthiness, and how that works out in our life and what genuine faith and trust in God's ability is at that point.
That's another opportunity to address humility there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pastor Lisa, help us with this final bit of the text today.
What I was hearing in it is the importance of recognizing, I think like you're saying, that there's a fort of, that God comes for all, everyone. I mean, this is a Gentile, and it's like you're saying that the Jewish authorities are even coming to his, you know, his saying, hey, you know, he's really worth your time, so please, you know, help him out, because he's done a lot for us, and he's a really good guy. And I keep thinking about what Pope Francis has recently said about atheists and about people of non-believers, and about, you know, that he's saying that they're good people, and that, you know, that my understanding is that he taught them in a homily about the importance of recognizing them as having God working in them, and they're not faithful, you know, they don't see themselves as believers the same that that he does.
I'm struck by this passage as the gospel of the unexpected, which is a theme I go to from time to time, but we have a centurion here that we don't expect him, number one, to value his slave. We don't expect him, number two, to value the Jewish people where he lives, and yet we discover mm-hmm. he loves our people. He's built a synagogue for us. He's, you know, done all of these things. And maybe we don't expect the Jews to speak well of the Romans. Then Jesus does the unexpected. Jesus says, I didn't expect to find this kind of faith, but I have. I love his miracle. He doesn't even have to show up. He just says, okay, and the slave as well. So the unexpected grace of God and how we find it in places we least expect. Mm-hmm. Colleagues, thank you. I think you've all raised some excellent points for consideration, and I know the pastors that will be listening in and reading the Lectionary Lab website will all be working to come up with what they need to say to their congregations for this Sunday. So let me ask each of you any final words. Lisa, again, we thank you for being with us today. And last shot, what would you like to say to the listeners on the Lectionary Lab?
I think sticking with this theme of the worthy and those who are worthy and unworthy, and how God really, Jesus was called, and we are called to be there for everyone in our communities. It's not an exclusive faith. We are inclusive, and more we need to support one another and being open to that. I think that's where I'm going to go with this.
Well, listen, give Niebuhr a rub behind the ears for us, and we hope that you have a great weekend this weekend in your church and your ride-alongs with the police department. Thanks for sharing your time with us. God bless you. We'll have you back on again.
Thank you. And, well, this babe would love to come back someday. Thank you, Bubba.
Take care, Lisa.
All right, Bubba. Well, good show today. Appreciate Lisa joining us. As always, I appreciate your insights. And I reckon nothing left for us to do but tell everybody bye.
Well, I reckon I'll tell everybody bye then.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Mama Told Me by Frank Anea. We go out this session with Ring of Fire, performed by Johnny Cash, written by June Carter Cash and Merle Kilgore.
Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. The taste of love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I fell for you like a child. Oh, but the fire went wild. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.